Salutations and shit, folks. Welcome, welcome, welcome back to another episode of your favorite travel podcast, Travel and Shit, where I, your host, D. Carrie, have an experiential conversation about the nuanced ways that travel intersects with regular life. And as a bit of personal housekeeping, I should note, hey, Taj, I know the last episode I said hi to my best friend and my two nieces because I was surprised to hear that they listened to the show, and I realized that I forgot the husband. Hi, brother-in-law. So, hello to the Neesmith family. Just wanted to throw that in there. And I also had mentioned that, if y'all don't know, there are options to listening and enjoying the podcast. I'm happy to have you here with whatever medium. But faces, guys, I have some of the most beautiful guests. And I am joined again by a beautiful face. So, pull up to YouTube if you want to see what we look like. And to welcome this face, my guest. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me. If you would please introduce yourself.
Hi, what a kind welcome on a day where I don't feel like such a beautiful guest, so I'll take it. Hi, I'm happy to be here. My name is Nosheen, and I am a millennial travel blogger with a focus on empowering people to travel alone.
Woo, woo, team millennials, we're here.
Yes.
So, what has your experience been like as a millennial traveler?
Very different from, well, I'll say very different traveling now that I'm kind of in my 30s, solidly in my 30s, really, than when I was traveling in my 20s. But I think one thing is that, you know, perhaps every generation feels this depending on where they're at. But something I realized from my 20s travels even is that a lot of times we think that there's a certain age demographic that's really out there traveling, that's really out there solo traveling, and that it's not necessarily for the other generations. And so what I've found is as I've gotten older, so many things in life have gotten better, including travel. And so that's what resonates with me. Yeah.
So when did you start traveling? You mentioned travel in your 20s. What did that look like for you?
Yeah. So I was a late bloomer on the traveling front. So when I was a kid, we would take trips as a family. But I realized as I got older that I always thought you had to have a specific reason to travel. You had to be traveling for work. You had to be traveling for school. Maybe you're going to go see family. But you don't just book a trip because you decided you saw a place on a map and wanted to go there, right? Okay. That was kind of my perception. And when I was in university, of course, you know, you hear about the study abroad programs and all of that. And for me, I am a Pakistani woman. I was born in Chicago, but raised, you know, in a Pakistani household. And there was no way that I was going to ask to go away for a full semester. I just didn't want to deal with the blowback from that. But I did have the nerve to ask to go away for 2 weeks over winter break. Yeah. So my first experience, I won't say out of the country because that was a family trip when I was super young, but to UK and sort of that part of the world was when I was in university for a 2-week travel writing course with school. Yeah.
So where are you located now? You said leaving the country. Where? What is that for you?
Leaving the country. So I'm in the United States. Yes.
Okay.
Point of clarification, very important for a travel podcast. Good note.
Sometimes I feel like we forget that. And then when we met, that's another reason why I try not to ask too many questions before we record, because then I forget like what I asked you guys. So college travel, what did you travel alone? Did you travel with friends? Like, how did you have to navigate traveling? Because it sounds like your family may not have necessarily been behind, you know, wind beneath your wings, go girl, enjoy it. Tell us how it was. Call us back. Like, what were those navigating? What were those challenges like?
Yeah. So no, I wasn't alone. I went with the school program. So that in and of itself, I think, you know, was good to kind of ease their nerves around it. But also one of my really good friends was going on the trip as well. And so that 2.5-week stint was 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks was perfectly fine from what I recall. And then I didn't travel again or have it really on my radar for another several years. This was once I had graduated. And for the first couple years out of school, I I did a program called Teach for America. So I was teaching sixth grade English in Houston. And for some reason, I had it in my head that I would love to go to Italy one day. You know, wouldn't that be amazing to go to Italy one day? And I don't know if I ever thought it would actually happen. It just sounded like a nice idea. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned it to one of my friends and just mentioned it one time. And she said, okay, well, let's go then. I was like, oh, what?
That's
so, it's so simple. Yeah. We were teachers. We had summer break. So we went, you know, the worst time of year to go to Rome, like July, August, so hot. Okay. But I loved every second of it because it's Italy. How could you not?
What part of Italy did you guys go to?
We did Rome and then Naples and then a slice of the Amalfi Coast as well.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, we packed a lot in, and my favorite pair of sandals at the time totally broke. I was the tannest I had ever been. It was so, so hot. And we stayed at a hostel. Like, when I think back to that hostel now, I had such a romanticized, you know, view of it. Wow, we stayed in this hostel. It's amazing. And I think back to it and I'm like, you could not pay me to go stay in that environment again. So many people, such a small bathroom to share.
Yeah. The things you do in your 20s and the things you kind of like, I don't want to say muster through, because at the time it's like the best fucking idea.
Yes.
It's like, oh, why didn't we think of this sooner? This is so it. And then it's just like, ooh, no, I need too many pillows for that to work.
I'm glad I did it when I did, because this version of me is not going to have it.
So what is this version of you? What are your travels looking like now?
Yeah. So these days I prefer slow travel and I prefer solo travel, which wasn't always the case. After I took my first solo trip, I actually came back. I had a different blog at the time where I shared my thoughts, as I think many of us back in the day did when websites were coming up and we traveled. And it's funny because I still have that post pulled up and I'm like, you know, I took a solo trip. I did it. And here's what I learned. It is not for me. Absolutely not. I hated it. Never again. And there it is. It's written. I can go back and read it. And I am a very different person from that now. I love solo travel.
So how did you get into solo travel? What was your first solo travel? And since it wasn't on your radar, like, how did you fall into solo travel?
Yes, that's a good question. And I have the answer from back then, which is there's a lot of confusion around it, and the answer more recently, which there's a lot of clarity around. So it's really in phases. So I'll start with your first question of my first solo trip. So eventually, after I did the teaching for 2 years, I still had that itch to that study abroad itch that I never got to fulfill. And so, you know, there are those programs where you can go teach abroad for a year. Mm-hmm. And I ended up in Madrid for a year. And while I was there, I took a lot of weekend trips, and I don't know how. I truly don't know why I had this challenge for myself. Okay, I have to take at least one solo trip this year while I'm here. I have no clue where it came from, because back then, Instagram wasn't really a big thing. Okay. I didn't hear solo travel everywhere the way that I now do. Somehow, it planted itself in my head, and so I went to Porto, Portugal. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been there?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I haven't done Portugal. I've only done Barcelona. And I was like on the outskirts. So I spent like a day in Barcelona, and the rest of it was kind of like looking at beautiful mountains. But I don't really feel like I got like a true Barcelona experience.
Oh, you have to go back. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely would.
Well, I went to Porto, and it's kind of like the second city of Portugal, you know. So there's Lisbon. Everyone goes to Lisbon. Lisbon is great. And then there's Porto, which a lot of people love even more than Lisbon. And, you know, that second city effect that happens in a lot of countries. And that's where I went. I went for a weekend. And the moment that I landed, it was raining. It was kind of cold. I had my contact lenses at the very bottom of my bag, and I couldn't check in yet to my hostel, so I just left my bag there. So I'm out there in the rain hitting my glasses, so I'm like, I can't really see what's going on. It's windy. I don't have Google Maps at this time. I'm using the paper map from the hostel, and I'm trying to figure out what the heck to do. I don't have anyone to turn to and say, this is miserable, isn't it? I don't have anyone to turn to and say, what should we do? And up until that point, all the trips I had taken with my friends, I never really was the one navigating because they just were faster map readers than me. And so I never really had to. And so I was just like, oh my God, what a terrible, what a terrible idea. And I ended up stumbling into a really adorable coffee shop and calmed myself down. And that's where I was like, okay, what are we looking at? What are we working with? Oh, I get to decide all of the things. Mm. Okay, that's going to be interesting. And I do remember that night I staying at a hostel, like we all had a board game night and I remember making friends there. The other thing was I really thought solo trip. I thought I failed that trip because I made friends along the way. Hmm. And I thought, oh my God, I don't even know how to take a solo trip and be alone because I'm striking up conversations with people on this walking tour and now like going and doing things with them. Whereas now I know that's part of the fun of solo travel.
Yeah. That is so like adorable to me that you thought you had to like do all of it by yourself.
Yes. Oh,
wow. I never considered that.
Yeah. Yeah, I really did. And so I feel like I got through it, or that's how I felt coming back. And now, honestly, it was ages ago. So it's, there are pieces where I can remember vividly and there are pieces where I'm like, I'm so removed from it. But yeah, that was my first experience.
And so how do you travel now?
Now I do a lot of solo and slow travel. So what changed, right? Like that's now I willingly do it. And there have been many, many changes that have contributed to that, including a divorce, including being isolated during lockdown for a year, including a major shift in my mindset where I realized that even though a lot of people love the idea of travel. Yeah, absolutely. I want to go. Yeah, let's do it. It's not a priority for everyone the way that it's a priority for me. And realizing that, okay, I could be waiting a really long time if I wait for people's priorities to change. They may never change. So a lot of factors contributed to that. And so now I still welcome, you know, if friends want to join me or if my sister wants to join me on a trip, but I don't wait for someone else and I don't plan around someone else's schedule anymore. And that has been transformative for me.
So how did you go from your parents or your family, at least for you, feeling like they were going to give you pushback for the study abroad, like the semester abroad? How did that fare in terms of the solo traveling? Did you have any pushback from your family? Did you have to negotiate them not being on your phone every minute? Like, what was that experience for you? And I'm curious culturally, because I am very, very like in my own little box in terms of when I say my family has done an amazing, amazing job of making me feel as if like I don't necessarily have to check in for permission for things, right? So I'm always curious when other people, and I see it especially with like some of my Caribbean friends, where they're just like, oh, my mother would never, or oh, I couldn't, my father would fucking kill me if I did. And I'm just like, I love my parents and I always want to make them proud. And, you know, I want to say I care what they think in the sense that I ask their opinion on things. However, I don't feel as if I need to ask permission. I don't feel as if they give me pushback, that's necessarily going to change my mind. So whenever I hear where people are just like, oh, my family or my parents kind of wouldn't mesh with my train of thought, it's always, what's that like? So I'm curious, like, what was that like for you embarking on that solo journey, like that first solo trip or like the first couple of solo trips when you, you know, at one point didn't really have, I don't want to say support or encouragement, because there could be support and encouragement there, but I don't know, what was it like?
Yeah, well, first, I'll say this. So I certainly don't speak for all South Asians, but I will say I hear you in that point that you just shared. And there is this concept of, oh, I care about my parents and that's why. But I in my experience, it goes beyond that. Like, it really does feel like what you said, that you have to ask for permission.
Okay.
And that if you get a no, that's just it, that there's no option. You really, I don't know what it is, but there is something within,
okay,
within it where it's just, that's, it's a very, it's more of an obligation mindset.
Hmm.
And it doesn't seem like there is an alternative. It doesn't seem like there's room to say, respectfully, no. And so what happened between that solo trip to Porto and being abroad and all of that, which again, so I will say, going back to what I said earlier, I always thought you had to have a reason to travel.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of followed me, right? Because when I went abroad, I had secured a job. So I was like, okay, I have a job. So now I get to go abroad, right, because I have this job. What happened between that experience and my more recent solo travels is that I became a different person. Truly, I became a different person. You know, that I was in my mid-20s. This really began in my early 30s. I had gotten married. I had gotten divorced. I had been through some, you know, additional things. And mm-hmm. this time when I approached my family of, hey, I decided, so it was during the lockdown, all the companies went remote. And I really liked that because I thrive. I want to work from home. Great. I can do that. Same. Homebody life. So
love it.
It was okay. Yeah. It was okay until it wasn't. So it was like toward the end of 2020, which is the year after my divorce. So it was right when I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to like get back out there in the world and like maybe date and like have a community. And the world went into lockdown and I was living alone for the first time and I was alone. Mm. So while that gave me a lot, it allowed me to work on my self-love. It allowed me to understand who I am as a person, which again, growing up the way that I did, it just, you just are not your own person. And there's not, there's always putting yourself second. There's not really understanding, oh, well, what do I like to do? And like, what are my values?
Mm-hmm.
That was a transformative piece. And I evolved from that. But also when my company announced that, okay, everyone, for 2021, we're also going to be fully remote, I just felt my apartment walls close in on me. And I had spent a year, you know, being like, let me get in touch with, what do I like in terms of design and interior, you know, aesthetics and all of that. And I curated this like apartment and all of a sudden I was like, I can't breathe in here. What do you mean? I have to like live in this box and just turn on every day to work and then turn off. And like, what is this life? So I first decided, I had just bought a those sun lamps, like the sunlight lamps to like keep you happy during winter months because Chicago. I decided, screw this, I'm going to go to Costa Rica. I returned that lamp and I was like, I'm done with this. I'm just going to go to the
real
sun.
Real sun. Yeah,
exactly. And I also, I was so sure in my decision. And I feel like I had already done the things that were expected of me by going through and getting married. And, you know, I'm like, I tried that. I tried it your way. And I was very intentional this time about, I'm not asking for permission. I'm going to go and I am going to lovingly and kindly tell my parents, hey, this is what's happening. This is what I'm doing. Here's what I've thought through. And I also had to get to a place where their worry didn't feel like a burden to me.
Okay.
And I had to accept, I had to go to them and be able to say, which took me a while to get to, but to be able to say, I'm not going to tell you not to worry. Of course you're going to worry.
Yeah.
Here's what I can do about it. Here's what I can't do about it. And then I had to tell myself, like, I can't take that on on top of my own fears.
Yeah. I get that one. Because as much as my family doesn't give me pushback, there's like the worry part. And it's just, well, girl, you're going to worry. But like, I'd like you to worry about me the way you worry about me if I tell you that I'm leaving an event in another borough at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Fair. You know, I like gauge your expectations.
Yes.
No, I'm not stupid. Be worried. I like it. Thanks. Not a damsel, though. You actually got me, you know, where I'm at now. We can do this. So what was the transition for you in your, because that was really interesting to me about saying that you did a lot more reflection, because I find that when I'm doing that self-reflection conversation, especially in the realm of travel and shit, is that it's always a transformative trip or it's a travel. And I love to hear that in this experience of yours, that it, I don't want to say it went the opposite way, but it started with, no, I did that self-reflecting. I grew up a little bit before. And that's when it was like, you know what? We're going to add travel to the mix. So what was that shift in personhood for you like?
Yeah, this has also been an aha moment for me, because when I took that, when I decided to go to Costa Rica solo, it wasn't like I was like, okay, I love solo travel, now I'm going to go. It was like, okay, I guess like, if I want to go, this is the way that it's going to have to be, and I have to go alone. And when I went on that trip, and I realized, oh, this is very different from that Porto experience. I actually am really enjoying myself. That's when I got to thinking about what changed, what's different. Mm. And one thing that I realized, both through the decision to get divorced and then the way that I spent my time afterwards in that year of isolation, is that your relationship with yourself really affects how much you enjoy solo travel. And maybe that's a duh moment, but to me, I was like, oh my goodness, this realization, this epiphany that like, oh, because I now love myself more, and because I now have a clearer idea of who I am and what kinds of things I like to do, you know, and oh, I learned how to enjoy my own company. Solo travel now, being with myself, is actually quite a great experience. That was the big shift for me.
I can see like a similarity in us, and a difference in, I was by myself for so long. So I moved out, I was on my, like 2008, and I, you know, you date here and there, you talk to guys, whatever, but I never had anything serious. I never had any long-term. So it was just me. So I learned how to get, and I've always been kind of like a loner kid anyway. I could sit and entertain myself. So for me, it was just like, girl, you do everything by yourself. Because I remember when I was turning 25, like I had that quarter life crisis. And it was like, okay, something is going to shift. I'm going to be 30 soon. I was only turning 25 and I'm already worried about 30.
Oh my God, so I'm feel like, that.
It was like, oh, I got some, it's like, it was just so like, it was a thing. And then 30 days before my birthday, I decided to do something new every day. And that was kind of like the beginning of, huh, I can go to the movies by myself. I can go to the mall by myself. I can go eat by myself. Like all of these things that I was doing by myself, like I lived alone. Like I went grocery shopping by myself. I made it to work by myself. So I'm like, okay, let's transfer this here. And then all of a sudden it just started making more sense to travel. What? Like you said, I don't want to wait for somebody else. My friends were getting married. My friends were having kids. So it was kind of like, all right, I am either going to not go or go by myself. Yeah. And it was that transition from, I've been doing fine by myself. I do all of these things here by myself. Why not just do the same things in Bermuda?
Yes. So did you immediately love solo travel?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I absolutely did. Because I had done like traveling. I didn't leave the country until I was like 30. And
wow,
I had done like, you know, trips here and there, but it was always to do something like go see cousins in Virginia, or I got family in Atlanta, or, you know, Mardi Gras. I went to Mardi Gras like every year for like a couple of years for a while. So I would do trips where I would go by myself, but it was always going someplace where I knew somebody else. Mm-hmm. So it didn't really feel like solo travel because I'm staying with somebody else. And then I'm with other people like the entire time I was at these destinations. But then it was, all right, so she would have to wait for her man, and they just got married, so I know they can't go. So, you know what? I'm not going to wait till I get a man. I'm just going to go. And then it was like, I've done the bent be on the plane by myself. I know how to navigate an airport at this point. So that wasn't like really, you know, that didn't give me any anxiety. But I didn't necessarily know how far to go. I initially was very adventurous. Pat cell phone back here. My first trip was actually supposed to be to Martinique. I don't speak a lick of French. I had rented a car. I've never driven on the left side. I I was balls to the wall, girl. I was all the way in deep. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking. And then it got canceled. It was just a whole rigmarole. Something hit the plane while it was grounded. They had shifted the trip. And I said, you're going to cause me to lose a day. I don't want to sit on a bus to Boston to get on a flight in Boston. And then, no. Canceled it. And then I ended up talking to my mom. And I'm just like, I don't know, girl. What am I going to do? Couple of trip options. I'm looking at Mexico or Bermuda. And she's like, oh, I loved Bermuda. Do Bermuda. You'll have a great time. And I took my same little suitcase. I want to say under or overpacked. I just didn't have the right clothes. I had packed for like 85 degrees and it was like 70 degrees at best in Bermuda. So it wasn't like that far off, but it was like I had a jacket on top of like spaghetti straps every day. So it was kind of like I would have been better with like jeans and a t-shirt. But so yeah,
but it sounds like you got redirected. Universal redirection. Yeah.
It was the perfect experience. And I think that that is so like, and that's why I like having these conversations, because there are a lot of different ways to skin a cat, right? There are different ways to prepare yourself for solo travel. And I love that now we're in an era and a time where there are podcasts, there are YouTube channels, there are eBooks, there are, you know, TikToks and all the social medias, because you were walking around with a map. Like a printed map. You know what I mean? And it's like, we are in an era now where it's as exciting, but now there's so much more help. In terms of the planning process, and that's another way that we have a lot more advantages now than we did when we first started traveling versus even before we, you know, got out of our little bags and ventured out into the world. What do you had, because you had mentioned slow travel. Mm-hmm. And I know that you said that you had taken the leap and done Costa Rica. And I know that for the guests, that was for an extended period of time. Like you weren't just there for like 2 weeks, right?
No, so yeah.
What was that like in terms of planning for different lengths of trips? Because unfortunately, I've not had the opportunity to do longer travel. The longest I've ever been anywhere is like a week. I can pack in a lot of shit to do in like 7 days, but that's all I've ever planned for. So for someone who has done longer trips, slower travel, what do you find the differences in the slower travel planning options and then the longer planning options?
Yeah. So what I love about slow travel and longer travel is that you don't have to cram everything in and you can really kind of get settled a little bit and you can kind of get to know the daily life and the daily routines. And it also gives you a little bit of space where you don't then have to plan every single thing you're going to do in all of your activities in advance, right? Like if you're going for a week, you need to know exactly what you're going to do and how you're going to make the most of your time. If you're going for, you know, I like to go for 3 to 4 months at a time when I can. It's different because I know, okay, I know the high level things that everyone does when they go here and I know I'm going to do that, but leaves opportunity for discovery. I don't have to spend as much time upfront planning for that. But where I spend more time planning might be really getting a sense of accommodations. Okay.
Yeah.
I really want to be in a really solid location if I'm going to be somewhere for 3 to 4 months. Or if I'm going to be in one country for that long, do I want to stay in the same city or do I want to spread myself out around a few different cities? And what cities might those be? And so there's a lot more of that location aspect of the planning that I look into. I also look at safety a little bit differently. So, you know, I look a little more in depth about what's the day-to-day stuff. So beyond the pickpocketing that, you know, if you're going to go be a tourist anywhere in any big city, there's some common sense things you have to know. And I think a lot of it, like growing up in a big city environment, it feels just like innate common sense to me. Right. And so beyond that, I'm like, okay, what else do I have to be on the lookout for? And so I'll do some research into that. And then transportation. So if I'm going somewhere for maybe a week or two, I'll probably just, if I needed to, take Ubers. I mean, I really prefer to walk when I'm in a walkable city and take public transportation. But for ease, and if I'm short on time, I'll take the ride shares and the taxis. But going somewhere for longer, I might look into, okay, what passes? Do I need a transportation pass? You know, what are my options here? So yeah, that's where I would say the upfront planning part is a little mm-hmm. bit different. The focus of mine is a little bit different.
What types of things do you find that you have to be concerned about in terms of safety for a slow travel? Like, what have those different things looked like for you? And then also, like, where have you done slow travels, and how long did you spend in those places?
Yeah. So I'll start with the where. So I've done Costa Rica a couple times. Mm-hmm. I have done different parts of Mexico. I have done Japan, and I did where else? Like Rome, France.
How long did you stay in Japan?
I was in Japan only for maybe a month. Yeah. It was cool. I need to go back.
So like a fucking month in Japan.
Yeah. Have you been to Japan?
No.
Oh, you gotta go.
Yeah, it's very high on the short list. It's very high on the short list. I think it's like number four. I can say, oh yeah, it's like number four. Ireland is number one.
Ireland is on the top of so many people's lists right now. Why? Mm-hmm. What puts it at the top of your list? I'm intrigued.
For me, it was doing my ancestry, the 23andMe.
Yeah.
And I'm just like scrolling through all the way at the bottom. It's a little, I think it's like a little 8% or something. I'm like, oh, you don't say.
I like green pastures. Sounds like I got to go have Guinness in Ireland.
Hello. You know, let's tap dance over that way and see what they're talking about. Let's go see what the bar life is about. Let's go look at a fucking castle. You know how many Lifetime movies I've watched where they're like the Christmas ones where they stumble into a castle and they help them fix it? What's her name was in one of the models. She did one of those. And I want to say it was in like Ireland or Scotland or something. And I'm just like, oh, I might want to try that. So yeah, that's why it's on my list.
Oh my gosh, how funny. I just keep hearing it lately. It's like, I feel like Ireland is the destination of the year or something. So very cool. Okay. So safety, you had asked me about safety.
Yes.
So it's not necessarily that it ends up being super different, but mm-hmm. I do find suppose I dig a little bit deeper myself when I'm looking. And the way that I do that is, we talked briefly about it before we started, but through Facebook groups. Mm. Facebook groups are invaluable for getting research and on the ground information when you're going to go somewhere for a longer period of time, because there are Facebook groups like expats in whatever location, you know, or locals in whatever location. And so if you get into these groups, you're not getting the, you know, more standard stuff that comes up on Google, which as a travel blogger, I highly recommend, because I put thorough effort into my blog posts. But when I want to go somewhere for longer than, you know, like a weekend itinerary, I want to know, okay, the people who are living here, what are they talking about? What's on their radar from a safety perspective? What's coming up? What news items are they talking about? And how are they talking about it? Are they saying, oh, this kind of thing happens all the time, you just got to do XYZ? Or are they saying, yeah, that was really shocking and surprising, that never happens, you know, mm-hmm. just to kind of get my bearings. Like, what am I walking into? What am I stepping into? Is this a place I want to be for this amount of time? And also, what restaurants are they going to? And what mm-hmm. tour guides do they know that they recommend to their friends who come to visit them? You know, you get all of this rich insider information when you get into those Facebook groups of folks who are there on the ground for longer than, you know, a couple weeks.
That makes sense. And one thing I can think of, now that you're like, I'm listening to you and it's like, okay, no, that makes sense, because I'm thinking of things like, you should probably know whether or not infrastructure or like utilities are going to be, you know, consistent or not. Is this someplace where the internet can go out? Like, consider if you're going to be working remotely, that's not like, that's a safety concern, because you're about to lose your job. Like, you got to stay employed with this whole, you know, slower travel option. Mm-hmm. If that's what you're slow traveling, you know, if that's part of your slow travel, like if you ain't got to worry about a job, by all means, don't worry about it. But if you are just someplace you don't want to be caught off guard, not knowing that the lights can go out,
absolutely.
Or you don't necessarily want to know, you don't want to not know that your housing per se is the meters or whatever are going to be a little bit different. And because I know some places like they do like a certain amount of certain utilities that you're allowed. Like you, there's like a certain extent of electric that you have to use. Well, I'm trying to think if that was like Cuba or if it was in Colombia. It was someplace, and it was just kind of like, if you use more than X, Y, and Z, then there may be a charge and something, something, something. And of course, those are things like if you stay in an Airbnb per se, you check the Airbnb listing or those things. When you slow travel, how do you generally do your accommodations? Do you do Airbnbs? Do you rent like a whole house? Do you do
Typically,
the what's your option?
yeah, typically I do Airbnbs. I would love to find an option that is like that, but not Airbnb, because I feel like Airbnb can be hit or miss. But I thankfully have had good experiences, and I like to be able to work. I also am like kind of an early riser, and I go to bed early, so I'm like, I need to be in my own quiet little bubble. Millennial travel.
Same. I
So,
think
yeah.
Sonder is a nice go-between.
Okay, I've
They
heard of it, but I haven't tried it.
we've done Sonders in a couple different places. I think mostly in the States, though. I don't know that I've done an in oh, Canada. International, but not really international. But it's they tend to be like in apartment buildings. So it gives a feel of, oh no, people actually live here. They've got doormats and, like they're in like regular, oh no, I live here clothes coming in and out kind of thing. Versus you go to, it's kind of like some Airbnbs are just in residential buildings, but I feel like Saunders are just kind of like long-term stays. They feel like most people there are there for like a couple of months, for a
Okay.
while. Saunders have been a decent time. It doesn't have the feel of a hotel, but it also doesn't exactly feel like an Airbnb while not feeling like an Airbnb, because you can book some of them on Airbnb. Like I've found Sonder properties listed on Airbnb, found out they were on Sonder, and then just logged into Sonder and booked it that way.
Okay. That's good to know. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I've
Yeah.
enjoyed them so far. I've only had and no, that actually worked out, because I was gonna say I only have one experience, and in that experience it was just that it wasn't like, I just felt like little things could have been nicer. It was just
I've had that, and
being
yeah,
kind
I feel
of,
like that's
yeah. Cause like, I
common.
don't technically live here. So it's just like, I mean, all right, the chair could have had like something balance it so I'm not wobbling, but you get over stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's not really
Yeah.
the bigger deal. Do you think that you would have enjoyed slow travel in your 20s?
Oh, that's a good question. I sort of feel like I did slow travel. I don't know. Does it count or doesn't it? This is an interesting question. When I lived in Madrid for a year, because I was,
Absolutely. Well,
right? I was
because you
there.
did like the study abroad for that one,
I
right? Like it
did.
was a school thing.
I managed to get a Fulbright grant to do an English teaching
Okay.
assistantship there. So I they
Congrats on
basically
that.
placed me in a university setting, and I was the English teaching assistant, which
Okay.
honestly, I went from working like 70-hour weeks with Teach for America to 16-hour weeks in this European work
Wait,
life.
70-hour weeks?
Yeah, it was rough. It was nothing but
What?
work. There was just nothing but work in my life at that point.
That is balls. That sucks.
Yeah, it
Oh,
was
that's
really rough. I mean, and
horrible.
it's true what they say of like it's definitely rewarding, but I mean, I was up at like 4. I was opening the school every day, and then we were there, for, maybe like 4, 5, 6, depending on the day, and then go home and lesson plan all night because you're also like brand new to all of this. And so that was like the entire first year. And on the weekends back in those days, my teacher friends and I, we'd spend like one whole day at one coffee shop working and the next whole day at another coffee shop working on our lesson plans. And like that was year one of
That's
teaching.
miserable. That's miserable. My gosh.
Yeah, it was
Ugh,
rough.
gag. So, what have your experiences on the Facebook groups been like? Like, how do you suggest people navigate those? Because if you're not technically going to do, like, say, for example, You mentioned the expat groups, right? Mm-hmm. Do you find that those are valuable even if you're only going to be there for a week? Or do you suggest like maybe finding a different type of group to look into for kind of information? Or is there such thing as like overload, just too many pieces of information or referrals and recommendations? Like, what's the fine line? And like, what kind of groups do you people, do you suggest people check for different types of travel?
Yeah, so I have a guide on the best groups to join for solo travelers. And in that, I have the groups listed, but I also have recommendations of how I would, like what search terms mm-hmm. I would put into the, to Ooh. Find these groups, and then what I would look for within the groups. So there's a lot of information that can come out of it. And so to your point about, is it only for slow travel? I would say it also depends on the type of travel you're doing. So if you're only going for a week, but you are going to go and work from somewhere and you're going to kind of take the digital nomad approach, you want to look up digital nomads in Medellin, for example, and see mm-hmm. what the scene is like. Where are people hanging out? Do they have a WhatsApp group that they're all a part of? Do they have that idea of where internet is good or not? You know, all of those types of things. If you're going solo, there are a lot of solo specific groups. If you are going somewhere with the intent of, I might want to buy property here, there are groups for that. Mm. I mean, everything. And so what I would recommend is if you're starting, start really broad and just go into Facebook and go into the little, there's a little place where you can search for groups, like narrow down mm-hmm. what you're looking for, and just type in where you're going. And maybe start at the country level, then try to narrow it to the city level and see what's available. And then you can start adding in the words like expat or locals mm-hmm. or travelers or tourists and just swap different words out and see what's available and find the one that feels most aligned to you. And then the first thing you do is just go in there and see what people are talking about and use the search feature. So if you have specific questions in mind, which you likely do if you're planning a trip somewhere, right? Safety mm-hmm. or, you know, safe, unsafe, you know, just type in a variety of words and see what comes up and read through. And then if you notice, okay, I have this question in my mind. I don't see it answered. I would ask it to the group. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I think is a really big benefit of joining groups like this, especially as a solo traveler, is that back to the safety point, it's an added layer of sort of security and comfort, because on the off chance or, you know, if something does go wrong and you are in a place and you don't know anybody else or you need and you don't speak the language and you need someone to bridge the gap, this group is another place where you can go in and request help. Hey, I've seen it in groups, you know, hey, mm-hmm. I have to go to the doctor. I'm not well. I don't speak the language. Can someone come with me who can translate, you know, and you might find a fellow English speaker who can go with you and knows the area.
That's a really good point that I didn't consider, even though, to your point, I've seen that happen where someone will say, you know, I think the one that I've seen the most is my trip is on Friday and my passport is actually expired, or my husband lost his passport. I don't know how to expedite. Please someone help me. Or you're abroad and I lost my passport. My flight is in 2 days. I don't know how I'm getting home. And people will jump in and give suggestions, or the embassy is actually located here. This number doesn't work, girl. You got to go down there and talk to those people. Or like, people will really jump in and be helpful. So that's a really good point. It didn't occur to me, like, duh, you can ask for help. And especially if you've kind of started, you know, tiptoeing around the group before you actually get there, and you've kind of, I don't want to say made yourself known, because that works, it doesn't work, it whatever. But you've kind of gotten the layout or the tone, if you will. You've gotten a good sense of the voice and kind of know whether or not, like, this is a mod question, maybe ask a moderator, or they don't take well to asking a question that has already been asked before. So, you know, whether or not searching is as important, those things kind of matter in some groups. But another mm-hmm. point that you had made that I really liked was knowing what to search for. Once you know, and that I have found like the hard way, is that it's so much easier to get actually useful information when you're asking the right question. And unfortunately, when you don't know, you don't really know how to ask the question, because you're a little bit lost, if you will, to the nuance of, you know, which way to go about finding the information you want. Would you have any suggestions perhaps for somebody who is new to something, or if you're just going into it blind and you don't necessarily know, like, all right, I just know that I'm going to this city and I like being outside, but something about, you know, can I park easily? Is this a rental car? Like, how do you suggest somebody find information when they're not sure about if they're asking it the right way?
Yeah, I mean, what came up for me strongly as you were asking that is that's your question then, right? And like, I have been in groups where I have put, hey, I'm thinking about or I'm considering renting a car, but I feel like there are things that I'm not sure. I don't know what questions to ask. I'm not sure what I should be considering. Can you let me know, you know, what should I make sure that I'm thinking about that I might not have thought about? I would ask it just like that and see what people will share, because then you have some direction to go, and then maybe you know, use that, do your research, and then you have a more specific question you can come back with.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Okay. Sometimes just the thing is the thing. Yeah. I don't know what to ask y'all, but
yeah.
I am.
Help me think this through. Can this someone? Yeah, exactly.
So in terms of thinking through, do you have anybody that you bounce questions off of in terms of your travels? Do you have like family, friends that you touch base with? Do you travel with any of your family and friends now that you have gotten really comfortable with solo travel? Like, what is that? What is your community of travel?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, that's a really good question. I like that a lot. It really varies. And I think I am usually the person that my people come to ask the questions of, and I'm always there to bounce ideas of. It's my favorite topic to talk about. And even if I've just met someone and they tell me they're taking a trip to somewhere, it's really hard for me not to just ask them a million questions and give them a million tips about how to make it the best trip of their lives. But I do have, so I have friends, and this has been really cool because as I've started solo traveling, some of my friends have then said, wow, okay, you've inspired me to take my first solo trip. And in some cases, their solo trips include coming to meet me out where I am and then spending some time with me and some time on their own. So that's part of my community, is I've been able to see what friends do sort of prioritize taking the trip. And, you know, I can think through that way. And then my sister and I, we do try to take, I call it, and I will always call it, an annual sister trip, and she will too, even though it's not always annual. but we really like to take trips together when we can. And so last year or a couple years ago, no, maybe it was last year, we did Mexico, and I decided I'm going to go to Oaxaca, and I spent a couple weeks there, and she couldn't come for the full time, but she's like, I'll come meet you in Mexico City for the weekend. And then we flew home together. So yeah, so it's nice to have that as part of my community.
Have you been able to talk your parents into coming to visit you in any of the destinations? Have you traveled with your parents?
So my entire family did come to Europe when I was closing out that year in Madrid. And they sort of came to pick me up, and that was, you know, we got to show, my sister and I had both been to Europe at that point, so we got to sort of show them around. I feel bad for them because we did it while we were in our 20s, and I think they would have had more of a pleasant experience had we had our current versions in our 30s done it, because there was such a disconnect. My mom doesn't really love to travel, and my dad does, but you know, not everyone makes the best travel companion. You really have to like... Yes. Yeah, you gotta have a certain groove going, and so I prefer to go solo and do my thing,
Okay, so one more, did you travel when you were married?
Yes.
Okay, so in terms of the travel that you had done while you were in college, married life travel, and then solo travel, like what were those differences? Because I know that like I did a ton of solo traveling before I started traveling with my partner. So like vacations were totally fucking new to me. And it was just like, this is what everyone was so excited about. I fucking get it. It's a great freaking time. And then you meet your couple friends, and now you've got group trips. And so it was, that came like at the, it's the now end of my life. So it, I feel like the different stages that you kind of experience your travel, like how they're stacked and how they kind of fall into place, can not, they don't have to, but can influence like what pockets you look back on as like, okay, I like traveling this way for this reason. And then like, this stands out better. So like, what were the different like pockets of travel like for you? Like what was married travel and then especially to do couple traveling and then to go to set like the strong end of the solo traveling. What was that?
Yeah. Well, 20s travel was really fast travel. So we're talking about slow travel. 20s was the opposite. It was like, especially when I lived in Madrid, it was like, okay, we got to see as much of Europe as possible. Yeah. Weekend trips. We got 3 days here. We got 2 days here. I went to Morocco for like 2.5 days. For my 30th birthday. I did like
24 hours.
Yeah. Because it's like, I'd rather see something than nothing. Right.
Absolutely. And it was beautiful.
It's worth it. It's just, it's always worth it. For my 30th birthday, this is not when I was there, but the 30th birthday was shortly after getting married, and we went to Iceland, and it was a 3-day weekend. And it was when WOW Airlines was still a thing, so it made sense because it was like a budget airline. It was like, okay, yeah, I'll go just for a 3-day weekend, like, all the way to Iceland.
3 days? Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, now it makes sense. Yes.
But you know, the thing to remember about my coupled or married travel is that that marriage also ended in divorce. And so that traveling with that person and a lot of what leveraged me into a self-love journey, that was not a healthy relationship either. You know, it was right. quite unhealthy, quite, I mean, toxic. It's like so oversaid now, but really it was. And so, I think the best response I got was when I told someone that I was getting divorced, and they said, congratulations. And I was like, wow, thank you. Because that's how it felt for me. And so propelling from that into solo travel and feeling this freedom and being able to be with myself after being with someone who was not a good fit felt really good. It feels really good to be able to, for once, be in a season of life where I can cater to myself. And when I go, even when I'm home, you know, like there's family, there's a lot of family to be taken care of. My parents are getting older. I have a baby niece who I like to help out with and who I love. And I, you know, there are responsibilities, but when I'm traveling and when I'm solo traveling, I'm my responsibility. And there's something really restful and peaceful about that, that I really love.
Have you traveled with your niece before?
Yeah, we've done. For my brother-in-law's 40th, my sister planned like a surprise trip where they went to Turks and Caicos, and like a bunch of us, like friends, showed up. And so my niece was there. And we also did a family trip with my parents and everyone to Cape Cod a couple years ago. Okay. And so, yeah. And yeah, so she's got her little passport. She goes. And so we're hoping to take her to Europe in the fall. We'll see how things go. It's so fun to see the world through her eyes.
I was going to ask, like with kids, there's a different. Now, how old is she?
She will be she'll be 2 in a few months. So she's
she's like baby. Yeah. Okay. So it's like you have to make those different accommodations for a kid. But I feel like even at that age, you just throw them on your back and they don't really have opinions on anything. So at that point, it's just like, all right, so is the kid going to be safe? Like, or can I at least keep the kid safe? Oh, cool. Yeah, let's go. Bring the baby. Yeah. That's one thing. It's kind of like people have always been like, oh, well, if you have kids, you know, you can't travel. Girl, why not? They're free for the first 2 years. Like, they can sit right on your lap.
Take advantage.
They do everything that you do anyway. So it's just like, I can maybe see like, maybe not going zip lining, you know, that kind of thing. Or like not scuba. I've never been scuba diving, but like, what's the other one? Snorkeling. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for the most part, like you can still go out to eat. You still go to restaurants. And I'm not like a party girl, club girl anyway. So, I mean, most of the stuff I'm doing is.
And we can like, you know, tag team it. So on that Turks and Caicos trip, there was this clear bottomed kayak excursion. Mm-hmm. And so me and some of the folks went one day, and then the next day my sister and brother-in-law went, and I watched my niece, and like they got to go do their thing because they didn't allow kids under 3 on that experience. So So yeah, that's kind of a helpful thing to have too when you have sort of a village with you. But I've also seen people, you know, single parents traveling with their kids, like it's and solo travel with kids. I've seen it out there. And I say that because sometimes I don't really talk about it from this lens because I am not married and I don't have kids. But sometimes I do get questions about like, well, I'm married or I have kids. Can I still do this? And it's like, yeah, you know, what you were saying earlier about there's so much more information out now. I would just look up solo travel with a kid and you're going to find someone who is doing that, who can be an expander and an example for you. And those are the people you look to. You don't look to the people who are like, what? How could you? You could never. How irresponsible, this and that. Or I have no idea how you would, because that's not who you want to be. You look to the people you want to be like and you anchor onto that, right?
Yeah.
So.
And I like to remind everybody, every episode, travel is so much more than vacation. And it's especially apropos for this episode, considering you were saying that you thought travel had to have a reason, right? Like at one point it was, there has to be a reason for travel. And there are so many fucking reasons for traveling. It's just a matter of, can you talk yourself into that being the reason? What really did it for me, I promise you, is realizing that the same stuff I get into here, you can just do it someplace else. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a luxury, you know, big resort. And it doesn't have to be for, you know, a special occasion. It doesn't have to be for a vacation, a relaxing thing at all. You can go for a reason, but it can be for healthcare reason. Like you can go for medical tourism. You can go for education purposes. You can go for work purposes, family purposes. Find whatever that purpose you need to kind of tell yourself it is. And then just go. If you need to bring your kids with you, look for other people. Like don't ask the solo travel girls. Like don't ask the 20 somethings that are like moving and shaking. It's like, I'm not going to look at road trip content, right? From someone that's necessarily traveling with a slew of kids. We're not the same demographic. I'm not worried about what them kids want to do. I'm worried about what I want to do. So I'm going to look for other solo travelers that are going to be driving, or I'm going to look for other couples that are going to be driving, so that, you know, you are looking at the same types of suggestions and the same type of content that's in the same wheelhouse. And speaking of content and wheelhouses, where can people find you and your content and your wheelhouse of expertise?
Wow, what a segue. You must be a professional podcaster.
I wish. I'm just a great podcaster. I won't say goodness. Professional.
It's okay. I'll say it for you. That was a pro move.
I'll take it.
Well, I have my blog. So my blog is globe-gazers.com. Unfortunately, there is a hyphen in there because I don't know. I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but globe-gazers.com. I'm at globegazers on Instagram and TikTok. And yeah, those would be the best places to come find me.
And what type of content are they going to find on your website? And like, what is your niche? I know you had mentioned, obviously, the solo, right? Mm-hmm. But like, what other tips do you have? Because I know you had the ebook, the freebie, right? The researching.
Yeah. So I have a couple things. Sorry, I'm plugging my computer in. So it's in terms of types of content on the blog, it really is everything. So there are some really specific solo travel itinerary guides and safety tips that are available that are destination specific. There's also a guide on how to plan your first solo trip. So there's all of that. But then there are also, you know, the more typical itineraries you would find for how to spend a weekend here. The best, I just came back from Paris not too long ago, so the best croissant pastry making class, you know, like all of those types of things. I have a lot of content there right now for US, Mexico, and Europe. I have yet to add my Central America, like my Costa Rica experiences or my Japan experiences, but that is to come. And then I did recently write my first ebook, and it's called From Doubtful to Daring, and it is a beginner's planning guide to confident solo travel. So for anyone who wants to take the leap, it's really a little bit of backstory on my story, a little bit of inspiration and encouragement, and a lot of tactical, nitty-gritty, how do we actually plan this thing? And there is a solo travel self-assessment, like a readiness assessment on there, so you could see you know, where you're at and what you need to work on so you can get yourself feeling really confident before going on the trip. And then everything. How do you pick a destination? How do you, you know, stay safe? And all of the step-by-step guide to plan a solo trip. And then I also have, yeah, I have a freebie, which I think you have the link to, I hope.
I do. It'll be in the description box. Good folks.
Great. The best Facebook groups I recommend for solo travelers to join. These are ones, you know, that I have seen over the years, and I'm part of several of them, and how to best leverage them, what to search for in them. So yeah, it's all the ways you can read my stuff.
Machine, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
I got value from the conversation. And I know that the viewers, if you're on the YouTube, and the listeners, wherever you else are, have absolutely valued this conversation as well. It was such a joy to have you here. So thank you for being here with me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, y'all. Next episode. Bye.